As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Person you need in the morning other than your spouse. Here's Jeff Blair.
And so we're finally set for the division series, with the AL series between the Orioles and Tigers and Angels and Royals getting underway today on Sportsnet. I have my picks up on sportsnet.ca in a few minutes, along with six players to watch, so feel free to weigh in. And we'll be joined in a few minutes by Mike Bordick, Orioles TV analyst, and as you no doubt remember, a terrific infielder for 14 major league seasons. He'll help us preview the Orioles-Tigers series, which starts today at 5:37 on Sportsnet. The game will be joined in progress on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So, Orioles manager Buck Showalter has never won a World Series, but the Orioles won the East this year, going away despite injuries to Matt Wieters and Manny Machado and Chris Davis's suspension down the stretch. And you know what? That's one of the reasons Blue Jays fans feel a sense of opportunity lost. I mean, we're so used to fighting off the Boston Red Sox or the Tampa Bay Rays or, of course, the Yankees that any season in which all three of those teams stumble is viewed as a glorious opportunity, that was, in this case, lost. So let's look ahead to 2015 this morning, even as we acknowledge the Orioles' resiliency. Let's put a fresh take on this. Let's have some fun at the end of the regular season. Next regular season. There's nothing like looking ahead. What will the AL East standings look like? Who is positioned to scare you the most as a Blue Jays fan? Can the Orioles repeat? Or will the road to the AL East title go through another city? We'll talk baseball out of the gate. Mark Osborne and our newest regular, Renaud Lavoie of TVA Sports, will join us to talk hockey. And we'll have a big announcement about next Wednesday's show from Dundas and Young.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
All right, the matchups are set. It'll be the San Francisco Giants and the Washington Nationals. The Los Angeles Dodgers and St. Louis Cardinals in the National League. In the American League starting today, it'll be the Angels and the Kansas City Royals. And then at 5:37 today, or I should say preceded 5:37 by a series that a lot of us are looking forward to, the Baltimore Orioles against the Detroit Tigers. Mike Bordick is the Orioles TV analyst. He, of course, formerly played for the Orioles, formerly played for the Toronto Blue Jays as well, and Mike Bordick joins us right out of the gate on the Jeff Blair Show. Mike, thank you so much for doing this morning.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeff. How's it going?
It's going well. So tell me this. I mean, people are going to look at this series, and the first thing they're going to focus on is the Tigers starting pitching, and Scherzer and Verlander and Price and Rick Porcello rattling around there someplace as well. But we had Dan Duquette on a couple of weeks ago in Baseball Central, and he was making the case that he thought the Orioles starting rotation was the best rotation the Orioles have had since 79. The Orioles rotation and their pitching matchups in particular in this series, it seems like people are underrating them a bit, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. This rotation really made a turnaround, I guess, the beginning of June. They were kind of up and down the first couple months of the season, just trying to find some consistency. And I'll tell you what, the pitching coaches, Dave Wallace and Dom Chidi, have just done an incredible job of letting these guys understand, you know, that they have to be accountable for themselves. I think these guys came up and they were kind of catered to a little bit. They didn't really think the game through, think about, you know, their mechanics. They just listened to people. They had a veteran catcher in Matt Wieters. This year, Dave Wallace and Chidi really challenged them, you know, to take onus on themselves. And I'll tell you what, unfortunately, the Orioles had a terrible injury. Matt Wieters lost for the season with the elbow. But I think it was a kind of a blessing for this rotation. They really had to take responsibility for their own actions. And when they did, they thrived. I mean, they have been so impressive as far as minimizing damage. Sure, they get guys on base, but they're able to get that ground ball, double play, trust the defense behind them. And the whole rotation has been as sound as I've seen them, you know, since I've been here with the Orioles.
And Mike, one of the things that really impressed me about the Orioles this year, one of several things, is the fact that here's a team that lost its catcher, lost a third baseman who was not only a tremendous offensive player, but a game capable of playing game-changing defense. And yet, somehow they held it together defensively. In addition to the strong starting pitching, a tremendous bullpen, I want to talk to you about that in a minute, and all those home runs, they held it together defensively. What is it about this team that allows it to play the same type of baseball, the same sort of almost a very professional matter-of-fact baseball, even with those key injuries?
Well, I'll tell you, since Buck Showalter came aboard 3 years ago, he really established a sense of paying attention to detail throughout the organization. Playing defense was at the top of his list. If you couldn't catch the ball, if you couldn't make outs, you were not going to get an opportunity to play at the big league level. It was pretty much a bottom line. So the organization made a turnaround. Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter created this incredible depth every offseason, going out and getting these free agents, great character guys, guys that knew how to play the game. And every team, I don't care who it is tested with injuries, suspensions, things that happen throughout the course of the year, and the depth of an organization is constantly tested. Well, the Orioles had the depth this year. They have a very strong bench, and every guy they called on, even guys coming up through the system, you know, Caleb Joseph really, I think, should be looked at as one of the MVPs of the team. What he has done, controlling a running game, throwing out base runners, and the defense calling a game behind the plate, guys that have stepped in, and really this team not missing a beat, has been really impressive. But I think it's a tribute to the depth of the organization.
Mike Bordick joins us on the Jeff Blair Show, 416-870-0590, *591-888-666-0590. You can join the conversation on social media. Use the hashtag Blair Show. My Twitter handle is SN Jeff Blair. When I look at this matchup, and you know, you always go through the strengths and weaknesses and who is the edge where. The one advantage that I really see in the Orioles' favor is the bullpen. And it's not just the performance of the bullpen this year. I mean, you've got left-handers, right-handers, obviously, but you've got guys with different arm angles. You've got Darren O'Day. You've got Andrew Miller. It's a really well-balanced bullpen. And you know what? I got a feeling, Mike, that at the end of the day, those unsung middle relievers, guys like Darren O'Day, they may be the guys who play a significant role in this series.
Well, I have to agree with you. I think the strength of this team, and really the strength of the team when the Orioles made it to the playoffs back in 2012, was the bullpen. So, you know, they're really going to rely heavily on these guys, and they had an outstanding year. You know, and it was interesting how this bullpen really kind of evolved throughout the course of the year. Starting out, Tommy Hunter was the closer. Tommy's a big arm guy, but closing role just didn't quite suit him. Zach Britton stepped in there, one-time starter. You know, that he was questionable even making the team out of spring training. Gave him an opportunity at the closer role. He never looked back. Darren O'Day has been a great setup man for the last few years for Buck Showalter. And they added Andrew Miller. Arguably, probably the best back end of the bullpen in the game. I mean, both Andrew Miller, O'Day, and Zach Britton have incredible numbers against both left-handers and right-handers. So, you know, I think that's huge plus in the Orioles' advantage. And then you look at guys like Tommy Hunter and, you know, the other arms down there, Brad Brock, and I think Buck's going to put probably a couple of starters, Miguel Gonzalez and Bud Norris down there in the pen as well, you know, for this game. So, yeah, it is a true strength of this team. Obviously, you want the starters to go as deep as possible, but if you can get to the back end of this bullpen, it really makes for a shorter game because they've been lights out.
What has Andrew Miller brought to that team? Obviously, he makes the back end a lot deeper. Obviously, he's another late in the game option. But I've also got to think that he takes a bit of the load off of especially O'Day and Britton.
Yeah, he does for sure. You know, and he really takes a load off the whole bullpen because he's been so effective both against lefties and righties. I think in a lot of situations you see, you know, bullpens are set up where they have to match up in order to get to the back end of their bullpen. Well, Buck doesn't have to do that. You know, both Miller, O'Day, and Britton, they're holding opponents, both lefties and righties, to under 200 batting average. So, you know, all three of them have been very impressive, and Andrew Miller has really, you know, he was a piece. He was a piece. Dan Duquette went out looking, you know, obviously all year long, Dan's been looking to strengthen this team, and he quite possibly could be the key piece to get the Orioles to the promised land.
How big a role does postseason experience play? Because the Tigers obviously have a lot of it. The Orioles have some. And Nelson Cruz, they've got some pretty good postseason experience and some pretty good postseason numbers. But how big of a role does experience play in this series, do you think?
Well, I don't think it hurts. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it hurts having postseason experience. But, you know, I was real lucky. I got to play in four postseasons. And even my last one, my fourth one, I still felt like it was just all brand new. It was a new sense of adrenaline, a new feeling, a new season. So, you know, experience can only help so much. It's how just individual players handle the excitement, the emotion of every pitch, every play in a ball game. How they handle adversity in a ball game is really going to impact, you know, the success and failures in the postseason. And I think, you know, the Orioles, even though they are lacking the postseason experience, you know, they've been tested all year long. I think Buck challenges these guys. Every game is kind of thought of as a big game. There's a lot of pressure. And, you know, I think they're going to handle it very well. And I think what helps this team is they have a really good veteran nucleus. Adam Jones, you know, J.J. Hardy, Nelson Cruz, Delman Young, experienced player. I think the younger players, the guys without that postseason experience, are going to lean on the veteran guys. And if the veteran guys feel calm, cool, and collected and approach it like a regular season game, I think the younger players are going to follow suit.
Mike Bordick joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. What adjustments did Nelson Cruz make down the stretch? Because he was having a difficult September, finished with a little bit of a finishing kick, or I should say he had a difficult second half, finished with a bit of a finishing kick. What adjustments did you see Nelson Cruz making late in the year?
Well, I think historically Nelson can become a kind of a streaky hitter. He, you know, hot and cold, hot and cold. And he stayed hot pretty much the whole season. He did end up having that rough month where he tapered off a little bit. But Nelson's swing stays pretty consistent. You know, there might be a subtle change where he might pull off the ball just a hair, but it doesn't take much for Nelson to adjust his swing. And I think probably the reason why he bounced back and finished stronger and why I think he's going to make a huge impact in the postseason is the way Buck handled him throughout the course of the year. You know, he's always been an everyday outfielder. Buck was concerned about his health because there were times where he kind of broke down a little bit through the course of a season when he was with the Rangers and his numbers would taper off. Well, you see his numbers this year, just monster offensive production, you know, 40 home runs. And the way Buck handled him, the way he managed him, he played outfield. He kept him sharp in the outfield, playing him, but he DH'd him as well about half the time, you know. So kept his legs fresh, and I think that's why he responded at the end of the season the way he did and why I think he's going to respond in the postseason.
Mike, it was good of you to do this. Always great to talk to you.
All right. Good talking to you, too. Thanks a lot.
Take care. That is Mike Bordick. Man, could he play some shortstop? He's the Orioles TV analyst, and the Orioles and the Tigers will get the AL Division Series underway today at 5:30. We will have the game on Sportsnet. We'll have the game on Sportsnet 1, And we'll join the game in progress in Sportsnet 590, the Fan. And then ALS, the game one of the other series, goes at 8:30 in Sportsnet 1. That is the Royals at the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. We'll have that game as well in Sportsnet 590, the Fan. So we are your, well, we're your only choice for the Major League Baseball playoffs. And this is two very tough series to call. I've got to go with the Angels, and I'm not certain it won't be a sweep. I mean, I'm saying Angels in four, but the potential is there for a sweep, despite I think Kansas City's edge in starting pitching. But honestly, Detroit and Baltimore, you know what? I've been underestimating Baltimore all year, and I'm picking Detroit in the series. I think it's going to go five, but I've got an awful feeling that once again, I'm continuing to underestimate the Baltimore Orioles. I know I've been doing that all year. We're going to get to your calls at 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590, asking the question. I mean, I know the season is just over and we're already looking ahead to 2050. But we're asking the question, how with Baltimore having run away with this division and about to start the playoffs, who do you think is going to be the best team in the American League East next year? Maybe you think the Orioles can repeat, even though they're going to lose Nick Markakis and possibly Nelson Cruz. Maybe you think the Orioles are going to repeat. Maybe there's another team. Maybe, I don't know, just taking a wild stab here, you think the Blue Jays are the team. But which city in the American League East does the road to the division title go through next year? 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. We've got some breaking news. Let's go to Andrew Nye in our Sportsnet 590, the Fan newsroom. Mr. Nye.
Jeff, the Ottawa Senators are going to make a big announcement momentarily from Ottawa, and it could be two announcements, in fact. NHL on Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman reporting Ottawa has signed Bobby Ryan to a seven-year extension worth $50.75 million. That's an average annual value of $7.25 million. Just last month, you may remember report service that Ryan turned down a seven-year offer, but apparently they have settled their differences. Also, Erik Karlsson is expected to be named the team's new captain. That was first reported by Nick Kiprios this morning on Brady and Walker. So all things Senators happening today, Jeff.
Mr. Nye, thank you so much. So there you go. As Nick Kiprios first reported on Brady and Walker this morning, Erik Karlsson expected to be named captain of the Ottawa Senators. We had that discussion with Gary Galley yesterday about the Senators' captaincy, about the situation. And, I mean, obviously, Chris Phillips, Erik Karlsson, sort of the two guys you'd expect to be front runners for this. And it was interesting because Gary was of the opinion, and I know a lot of people in the Ottawa media shared his opinion. Gary was of the opinion that maybe you didn't want to put that much on Erik Karlsson at this time, that, you know, you may go someplace else. Phillips was the obvious guy because he's been there forever. But it now appears as if Erik Karlsson will be the Ottawa Senators captain. And of course, great news for the Senators, Bobby Ryan re-upping 7 years, $50.75 million, according to Elliot Friedman. That works out to $7.25 million per season. Senators have had a difficult time keeping core players happy. There's been a relatively steady exodus of core players out of that market. There's some concerns, and you've heard them expressed recently, about the financial situation in Ottawa, about owner Eugene Melnyk's financial situation. There's always been the sense around the NHL that Eugene Melnyk, I mean, there's rich and then there's really rich. Eugene Melnyk's rich. Nonetheless, it appears as if the Senators have signed Bobby Ryan to a seven-year contract at $50.75 million, which works out to $7.25 million per season. And considering the uncertainty around that team, that's got to be a huge, huge move, a huge boost for the Ottawa Senators. We will stay on top of that. Mark Osborne, by the way, co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game in Sportsnet 590, the Fan, will join us at 9:40. And Kelly Moore, sports director, executive hockey producer, 680 CJOB in Winnipeg. He'll join us at 10:15. We'll take a look at the Jets. We're kind of going around the Canadian teams right now as we get you set for puck drop, which is real soon, 6 days. But let's continue our focus on baseball until Mark Osborne joins us. The numbers are 416-870-0590, *591-888-660-590. John in Whitby, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Which city, John, does the road to next year's AL East Division title go through?
I hate to say it, Jeff, but it's going to go through Boston.
Mm-hmm. More than Tampa? You think more than Tampa?
Tampa, I don't think Tampa has the money to buy the pitching they need.
Well, their pitching will be pretty good. If they get Matt Moore back, their pitching's pretty good. I'd be more concerned about their lineup.
Home run, but that's about all they got.
Look, the offense has always been an issue with them. I'm not doubting you. I love that Boston did at the trade deadline. I think a lot will depend on whether or not Boston re-signs John Lester. You know, obviously, a lot of people thinking that John Lester is a free agent will take a look at re-upping with Boston. There are other people in the industry who really think John Lester is going to end up going to the Chicago Cubs. Although, you know, the Cubs, as much as they have good young players, they're not on the cusp of winning anything next year. So if John Lester goes to the Cubs, he's probably going to have to put up with the possibility of getting his ass handed to him for at least a season, maybe two seasons. But if Boston does get John Lester back, yeah, I can see Boston being certainly the early favorite out of spring training. Eddie in Fort Erie, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's up, Eddie?
Not much, Jeff. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. I think we're in the same wavelength with the Red Sox.
Yeah, because after what they did at the trade deadline, it's hard not to overlook that. However, though, depending on whoever does what in the offseason, our minds could probably change. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think right now you have to look at Boston probably. Again, if Boston re-signs John Lester, I don't know if they have to do much else.
Oh, yeah, that's the trump card, John Lester. And, you know, and I just want to give my quick predictions on the division.
Mm-hmm.
American League, I've got Angels and Orioles advancing.
Mm-hmm.
National League, I've got the Cardinals and the Nationals advancing.
Yeah, I'm going to make my National League picks on online at sportsnet.ca later. I'm with you in the I'm with you in the Nationals, but after watching how Pablo Sandoval appears to have woken up last night, I might have to take another look at that. Honest to God, Cards and Dodgers, I don't know where to go in that series. I really don't. There's a danger in underestimating the Cardinals. I love LA's pitching. And Clayton Kershaw can't start every day. He can't come in out of the bullpen. He can't hit. There's something about the Dodgers that prevents me from going all in on them. I mean, my first instinct is to take the Dodgers over the Cardinals, but I sit down and really take a look at the Dodgers lineup. And the one thing about the Dodgers lineup is it can be pitched to. The Cardinals lineup can be pitched to as well, obviously. It's not sort of the Cardinals lineup we're used to seeing. But I don't know. I'm sort of leaning towards the Cards as well. I think like a lot of baseball fans, I like what the Cardinals stand for. They're a good organization. I like the way they do business. But God almighty, I'm tired of seeing the Cardinals. I really am. Cardinals have sort of replaced the Yankees as the team that people are getting tired of seeing. They've had enough of the Cardinals. Time for somebody new. Fred in Lakefield, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's up, Fred?
Well, I was cheering for Pittsburgh. My son and I went to see the last series, last fall with Cincinnati for first place.
You know what? I was at that series as well. Is that not the best ballpark in baseball?
It is. It is. And it's the greatest city. We saw a couple of ball games, and then on Sunday we went to see the Steelers in Chicago play. It was an amazing weekend.
Yeah, it's a good city.
But now I'm cheering for Baltimore because for what they've done this year, they deserve to get all the support.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a question.
Sure.
about the Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
You have teams like Baltimore and Boston. One year they're the best, one year they're the worst. We're never really bad, but we're never really good.
Yeah, the muddy middle, right? The mushy middle.
So what does that say? Does that say management kowtows to the fans and just wants to appease them and they don't want to do what's right? Or Toronto just can't get good management for anything, anytime?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. Here's the thing about sort of trends in baseball and, you know, how teams are good one year and bad the next year. The problem, and I think what you're getting at is, should the Blue Jays maybe not look at tanking or at stripping down and rebuilding, and instead of being in the mushy middle all the time, you know, taking a shot at getting into the playoffs one year and retooling when they have to? The problem is, it's not like it's hockey or basketball or football where you can tank to get a great draft pick. I mean, sure, you can tank and get the second pick overall in the major league draft, but chances are pretty good that the guy you're drafting isn't going to help you right away, probably won't even help you in the second year. And you know what? It's not like any other sport. I mean, if you can get what you need in the baseball draft without having to draft first overall. I mean, you really can. So I don't know if there's that much of a, you know, there's that much to be said about sort of stripping down and rebuilding. To me, what it all comes down to is figuring out when you are going to have the maximum starting pitching. And I think that's what every team does. I think every team at some point in the year, or even before a season, sits down, or after a season, I'm sorry, sits down and says, all right, where are we with our starting pitching? Well, we've got two young guys who are just on the cusp. They'll be part of our rotation next year. We've got a couple of old guys. We've got a guy who's a year away from free agency, or we've got a guy going into free agency. I think teams make decisions based almost 90% on where they are at their starting pitching. And the idea is to try to maximize your window of opportunity in line with your starting pitching. What that means is good, young, cost-effective starting pitchers coming up together, taking their lumps one year, getting a little better next year, then boom, going on the year after that and getting your team in the postseason. And I think the Jays are positioned to do that now. They've never been positioned to do that. They've never had those three young starting pitchers. Well, I shouldn't say never. They did with Escobar, Carpenter, and Halliday. But since then, they've never had that group of three young starting pitchers where you could look at them and say, okay, this is where we are this year with them. This is where we should be next year with them. This is where we could be the next year. And, yeah, of course, everybody can get hurt. But the idea is you've got control of your starting pitching going forward. I think that's what baseball teams do. And there are some teams like the Blue Jays who are in the middle. You know, they're never going to have the high payroll to go out and sign the biggest free agent of the year. The free agent of the year is never going to want to come to the city for a variety of reasons, whether if you're a pitcher, it's a ballpark that's friendly to hitters. There's artificial turf, whatever the reasons, you're not going to come here. So the Jays are always in a position, or have always been in a position, of sort of having to make it up as they go along without having the freedom of knowing that, hey, we can just go out and throw money at a guy. We can go out and sign John Lester like that. Just like that. We can go out, we can compete for John Lester, we can sign him. So, absent that, you're left in a position where you're sort of making it up as you go along. And this is the first time since Halliday, Escobar, and Carpenter that Alex Anthopoulos has been able to sit down and say, all right, and again, you have to leave injuries aside because, you know, anybody can get hurt anytime. But this is the first time Alex Anthopoulos can say, all right, we've got Hutchinson, Stroman, we've got Sanchez. We're going to say Sanchez is a starter right now. That's a good base to start from for the next 4 or 5 years. You put Daniel Norris in there. Effectively, 2 years down the road, it's not entirely out of the question that you won't have a rotation of Hutchinson, Stroman, Sanchez and Norris, four-fifths of them homegrown, all of them making a pittance. This is the first time Alex Anthopoulos has been able to say that. So think about that from Alex's point of view. It's entirely possible that next year he doesn't have Mark Burley. I'm sorry, the year after next year, he doesn't have Mark Burley. Mark Burley's contract is done. It's entirely possible that in 2016, the Jays' rotation is Sanchez, Hutchison, Norris, Stroman. You still have Ari Dickey for a year. Maybe you trade Ari Dickey. So that, to me, is why you found the Jays in that mushy middle. They've never had that core group of starting pitchers that you can plan on. They haven't had that core group of starting pitchers for a decade that you can look at them and go, these are our guys going forward. Both in terms of makeup and in terms of stuff. Ricky Romero got a 5-year contract, but Ricky Romero's stuff isn't as good as Stroman's, isn't as good as Norris's, isn't as good as Sanchez's, isn't as good as Hutchison's. The Jays haven't had pitchers with their stuff coming up at the same time, ready to take the step at the same time. They haven't had that since Carpenter, Halliday, and Escobar. Mark Osborne is co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can follow him on Twitter at MarkOsborne21. The Leafs are bonding in Collingwood, shooting paintballs at Randy Carlyle and each other. Their final preseason game is tomorrow night at the Air Canada Centre against Detroit. And then we await the start of the NHL regular season Wednesday against the Montreal Canadiens. Mark Osborne will join us. And the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we are back. You know, of course, by now that Wednesday is going to be a pretty big day around here. It'll be the Leafs and the Habs dropping the puck in the regular season. All of us at Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and I mean all of us, starting with Brady and Walker, myself, Hockey Central, Bob McCowan, Primetime Sports, and of course, Tim and Sid. We're going to be broadcasting from Dundas Square all day on Wednesday. All day. So if you're down there, you know, between 9 to 12, and you want to drop by and say hi, get your picture taken with Travis McKenzie, and yes, ladies, he is single. If you want to do that, if you want to do that, feel free. Oh, yeah, there'll be some bands there, too. Like the Tragically Hip will be playing at 6:30. We'll get you set for the Habs and the Leafs. 6 days, 9 hours, 18 minutes. You know how I know that? Because when I turn my laptop on here, boom, right across the top. 6 days, 9 hours, and 18 minutes till the start of the NHL season for your Toronto Maple Leafs. One final preseason game on Friday against the Detroit Red Wings at the Air Canada Center. Then they got a couple of days off, and then they've got the Canadiens coming into town. Mark Osborne is co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He's one of our regular insiders. And Mark, thanks for joining us. I've got to ask you, what do you think Randy Carlyle, the coaching staff, David Nonis, what are their question marks right now going into tomorrow night's game?
That's a great question. I don't know if they necessarily look at it in that vein per se, Jeff. I mean, obviously the injuries are one thing that's, you know, a little bit concerning. You haven't had Stefan Robida playing an exhibition game, and it's good news that he's back to and going to be in the lineup tomorrow night. Cody Franson is another issue. If you take those two guys out of your defensive core, I look at the group that they have here, and, you know, with all due respect to some of the good camps that a guy like Stu Percy has had, but it becomes a pretty inexperienced group on the back end, and that would be a concern when you are, you know, one of the worst defending team in the National Hockey League last year. David Clarkson obviously would come to mind with having gotten off to a poor start, missing the first 10 games last year, and now, yeah, he's got a broken orbital bone, but it's not displaced, and he's going to wear a shield and all that kind of stuff. So David Booth being hurt, I know it's a function of training camp that all teams go through injuries, and yet those are probably some of the things that jump out at me as training camp comes to near an end.
Who's been the most impressive player for you so far that needed to impress, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know what? It's hard to say, you know, who's needed to impress. I think you always come into training camp and you're hoping that there are some guys that perhaps step up to the plate as this team looks for, you know, surprises. I think there's always that case that occurs during training camp is that perhaps this team is looking for guys to make that next jump.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's been a lot of talk of Brandon Kozin, you know, who proved at the junior level that he can score, I mean, twice over the 100-point mark in junior and with the Calgary Hitmen. He's a 24-year-old kid. He's had 4 years in the American Hockey League. And I think he's been one of those guys that's been a surprise for the Maple Leafs thus far. You know, Josh Levo is another kid who's been, you know, very surprising. I think all eyes have been on some of the acquisitions that they made over the summer, and you thought that, well, David Booth is hurt now. You know, Mike Santorelli, I don't think has jumped out as much as perhaps you would have liked him to. And maybe a guy like Matt Fratton has been probably the most disappointing guy of the group. You know, there's a few guys. I mean, Stu Percy, a former first-round pick, is a very cerebral kid. He does a lot of little things well. He's had a very good camp, so there's a handful of players there that, you know, may have not necessarily knocked it out of the ballpark, but I think they've had some pretty positive camps, and that's a good sign for the Maple Leafs.
Mark Osborne joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Are we pretty much certain now, do you think, Mark, that when the season starts, that first line will be back together and will be good to go? Or do you think that Randy Carlyle is maybe for the first couple of weeks into the season or the first couple of games, is he almost going to have to take a look at maybe trying to juggle things a little bit?
Yeah, I'd be really surprised, Jeff, if he changes it around. It's much like bringing the girl, you know, dancing with the girl you brought to the dance. Like, like, why would you change it this early when you certainly do understand? And you look back to the last season that the Leafs got off to a wonderful start, and I think that you have to hopefully get off to that similar start again this year. That's going to be so imperative for, you know, the team's confidence. I think maybe, you know, moving past the disappointment of the late season collapse last year. You know, that is so much of the mental aspect of this game. And, you know, this team and this market, you know, only those guys know what it's like inside of that dressing room. But, you know, those of us that are observers and you watch, and there are still some growing pains, and I think some things that they have to be able to mature and withstand, you know, some of the things that we've evidently seen that has not been able enable them to, you know, sustain a losing streak in which they did last year at an inopportune time. So Bozak, JVR, and Kessel, like, if you have a line that has been so productive and has such great chemistry together, I don't see you breaking that up for the sake of, you know, looking for some secondary scoring or even balancing your attack at this point of the season. That certainly is a possibility as things move forward, but I don't see that happening off the start.
What is going to be the most important thing for the Leafs in terms of the composition of that third and fourth line? Let's talk especially about the fourth line, because we know that Randy Carlyle's made a point of saying, look, we need a more effective fourth line. We need a fourth line that I can give a few more minutes to. I mean, they're not going to get the same minutes as the top two lines, obviously, but if you get a minute here, a minute there, by the end of the year, that may help keep a guy like Van Riemsdyk or Kessel or Tyler Bozak fresh. What's going to be the most important thing for that fourth line?
Well, I mean, if you look at the makeup, and if you're talking, if we're on the same page, you know, as you look at a Daniel Winnick or a Brandon Kozin, that you know, these guys can skate. I mean, let's be honest that it is a skating game, and if one thing that, you know, fourth line, if they could spell off, you know, your top end guys for even just those 2 or 3 minutes. I know that doesn't sound very much over the course of a regular season or in any particular game, but every team that does it is able to keep that, you know, that pace going. When you get to that 22, 23, 24 minute as a top end guy, I think over the course of a long season, that begins to wear on you. There's not too many players that can sustain, you know, a high level of play by playing those kind of minutes, certainly as offensive players that are also required to play, you know, without the puck and kill penalties. So when you bring in a guy like Daniel Winnick or Mike Santarelli in those spots, I think that should improve your penalty kill. And, of course, maybe from an offensive standpoint, where some of those guys that have been logging a lot of minutes, you know, maybe they become a little bit more, I mean, it's hard to say, they become even more eager to get back out on the ice and they've got a little bit more push to give you. That's, you know, certainly a thought and a consideration. I know that this, you know, management team and coaching staff are looking in areas to improve their team by small margins.
Mark, was good of you to join us today. It's just a few days away.
You betcha, Jeff. Thanks so much, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the rink.
Absolutely. That is Mark Osborne. He is co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Just to remind you what we were talking about, the 2014 Molson Canadian NHL Faceoff will be held in Toronto October 8th, all day starting at noon at Yonge Dundas Square in downtown Toronto. The Tragically Hip will be performing. Country music star Tim Hicks will be performing as well. It's a free festival. It starts at noon. There'll be an autograph and question and answer session featuring Daryl Sittler, Joe Nieuwendyk, and Wendell Clark. Again, the event starts officially at noon. We, being those of us at Sportsnet 590 The Fan, all of us will be broadcasting from Yonge Dundas Square. Brady and Walker will be down there. I'll be down there. Hockey Central will be down there. Tim and Sid will be down there. McCowan will be down there. And we'll be your destination right up to and including the drop of the puck at the Air Canada Centre as the Leafs and Canadians get the season started. So, again, it's a free outdoor celebration of hockey starting at noon at Yonge Dundas Square, the 2014 Molson Canadian NHL Faceoff, the Tragically Hip. And country music star Tim Hicks. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you're down in the area, please drop by and say hello. Going to return our focus to baseball. John Paul Morosi, the national baseball writer for Fox Sports, is going to join us at 10 o'clock. Kelly Moore, sports director and executive hockey producer of CJOB in Winnipeg. He'll be along at 10:15. We're going to take a look around the NHL at the Canadian teams. We'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets. John Urand at 10:40. Very interesting story. He's a sports media reporter for Sports Business Journal. Derek Jeter has started a website called Players Tribune. The idea behind the website, is essentially to circumvent the media, the mass media, and to link fans and players together in a social media platform. It appears as if it's something Derek Jeter's taking seriously. In other words, it appears as if it's something more than just, hey, Derek, we're doing a website. Want to stick your name on it? Yeah, okay. It appears as if he might be taking this seriously. So we'll talk to John Urand about that. Could it be the death of sports writing? You'd hate to see that happen. And Ray Rattle will be along at 11:15. He's a columnist for CSN Bay Area. We'll talk about the Giants. Would there be anything better than being a talk radio show host in the Bay Area right now? Athletics out. Raiders, a mess. 49ers, apparently coming apart at the seams. A chance their head coach ends up in Michigan. Oh, yeah, and the Giants. Yeah, they just keep on winning. They've won seven of their last elimination games. 7-0 in elimination games. That's awfully hard to do. Ray Rattle will join us. And then at 11:40, David Wright. He's a lawyer and founding partner with Ryder Wright Blair and Holmes LLP. his law firm is handling the case put forth by 40 of the top women soccer players in the game. They are suing, or they're launching legal action against FIFA and the Canadian Soccer Association over use of artificial turf for the Women's World Cup. So we've got a lot ahead. And I didn't even mention Baseball Central at noon with Kevin Barker and yours truly and Anthony Castrovinci, the national baseball writer for MLB.com. John Paul Morosi will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.